What's up, ladies and gents? Welcome to another episode of the Curfew Boys. Before we get things started, if you like what you hear, you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and TikTok, and see our beautiful faces on YouTube. So like and subscribe. You can listen to our podcast on any podcast platform like Apple Music, Spotify, Google, and whichever podcast stream you like to listen to, I guess.
Yeah, especially Apple Music. Not Apple Podcasts, but Apple Music. Yeah.
Apple, yeah.
We might be there with Taylor Swift's top songs too.
Yeah, it's not going to Taylor Swift, please. I like her, but now I'm starting to get annoyed of her. But anyways, we'll get to that later on.
Gee, maybe. I wonder why.
Well, it's fucking annoying, but anyways. So if you like what you hear, like and subscribe. Give us an honest rating and review. It's the only way to make us better. Your host tonight is Anxious Anthony. We got Fireman Sam in the house.
Hey now.
We got what I like to call him GQ Chris in the house.
Hey now.
And one last thing before I stop.
He's news reporter now. Chris with that background.
You see, did no. Takahashi, news anchor. Did Anthony just refer to me as an it? I feel like
maybe.
Rewind that. What did I say?
Wait. Chris, it's your new pronoun.
Yeah, it's Chris.
Your cousin it. Oh my god, your cousin it.
Very well. I can change his name to cousin it if you want. That I'll keep.
I might have technical difficulties with my screen, but I'm still here. I'm still alive. But yeah, oh my god, cousin it. It's cousin it.
No. My pronouns are she it.
Shit. Yeah. Okay. Got it.
But I wanted to say something to all our followers since I haven't been on. And I know last episode you had said there was a rule about this, that after 6 days of January, you can't wish anybody Happy New Year anymore or something like that.
That's Larry David's rule. Yes.
Fuck that rule. We're January 18th. This is my first episode of the year. Happy New Year to all our followers and our fans out there. And I just want to say Happy New Year to you guys and face to face because we've been texting like crazy, but we haven't really saw each other's faces. So Happy New Year to you both. I wish you a great year. And want to let that off my chest.
Happy New Year. Yeah. Well, you're back from Florida. Are you happy to be back in minus fucking 13 degree weather?
Disgusting. Can't wait. I'm going back in a few weeks, but I can't be here anymore. I'm fed up. This is disgusting weather. I don't want to sound negative because. Sorry?
Well, yeah, we're going to call you Florida Anthony right now.
It's happening. One day I'll be moving there. I'll be doing the podcast from there, and I could maybe do a Florida Panthers podcast. Who knows? But being a Florida Panthers, when I go in a few weeks, I will be potentially watching my first ever Florida game in Florida. I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, wow.
It's available. I'm just
waiting. You're going to be with all the other Quebecers there, too.
I've always wanted to experience a game at Sunrise Stadium.
Yeah, no kidding.
So cool. I'm just waiting to get closer to see. You know, I'm not going to buy the tickets now because they're not refundable, but the week of, I will be buying tickets. They're dirt cheap.
Kidding. Yeah.
The Reds are $115 American. Due to conversion, like at 160, you're spending fucking $300 for the Reds here in Montreal. So.
The conversion gets you a smoked meat sandwich.
Pretty much.
Yo, but Anthony, I have to ask you something. Speaking of Taylor Swift taking over the NFL, and you being the longtime New England Patriots fan, your thoughts on Bill Belichick saying goodbye for now to the franchise?
It sucks. It hurts. I mean, he was the team, right, for 24 years. And building that dynasty with Tom Brady. I mean, it has every good thing comes to an end, right? So I think I'm not disappointed or mad because, like, the whole Brady thing was a shock when it happened and how it happened. But you knew this was coming, and I think we needed the change. You know, after so long, you need fresh faces and fresh people. And look at exactly the Montreal Canadiens right now. There had to be a big change, you know, wipe out clean and start new instead of fresh, and you got to rebuild. And I think – it came to a point where Belichick needed to get out. It was just
But weren't there rumors that he might just let go of the coaching position and stick to the GM?
there was a lot of rumors, and there's rumors now because, you know, if you look at the press conference, they both left. It was both their decisions. They left amicably. They're still friends, still love each other. But then there's rumors now that they fought, and now one person wanted one thing. You know, you'll never get the truth unless you're them and you are the insider of the Patriots. Then you'll know the truth, but you'll never know. But there's all kinds of rumors. Those rumors that he was going to stay as a coach but leave the GM position, or stay GM and leave the coach position. Again, media talk is just, you'll never know the truth, unfortunately. Yeah, but I'm happy. I'm happy. I think it's time. We needed this change. As a Pats fan, we want to get back on top. Yes, Joey, we're going to come back.
I'm happy his Rams lost. Oh, my God. I'm so happy.
Yes. And you know what, Joey?
I'm so happy by one point. And yes, that should have been a passing interference in the end, and within like
Joey.
It should have been a penalty, but too bad. Too bad, Joe. Joe made a remark that, like, I know it was a friendly remark, but Joe is harmless. I get it, but just Joe, karma's a bitch, my friends.
Yeah,
he gets so mad. Are you
blaming the refs, and now he's doing the same thing? Well, good for you. But I'm happy for Detroit Lions. I'm really happy for the Lions. I know we're talking football now, and then it's coming to an end.
Oh, just real quick. I just wanted to break that up because it's...
No, but the whole Taylor Swift shit is just because, like, remember a couple of episodes, like, last year, the year before, I always said, you know, I love NFL better than NHL now. Like, I'm a big... Like, I love the way this organization is going and the salary cap and all that stuff, how they manage it.
Mm-hmm.
I find now it's becoming a big fucking joke. It's entertainment. It's like the WWE now, you know, like World Wrestling Federation. Entertainment. It's all entertainment. Everything's about Taylor Swift. Like, fuck off. Like,
I can't stand the media that covers
it's
her.
The media, like, it's the media coverage, because at the end,
like,
of the day,
it's not her fault. Like, she's just going there to support.
Yeah,
but now
she's asking. Now she's getting her fame. Like, last game, she caused that whole fucking dance and the whole. You know, like, fuck you.
And yeah,
her own personalized jacket of Kelce and Mahomes, and that was like on sale all over the market. Like,
but that's
good for her. Good for her. Good
marketing. No, it's the NFL. The NFL is like thanking her for bringing in millions of non-football knowledgeable people.
Yeah, it's a good marketing thing. I'm not gonna get away from business.
So here, real quick, you said it's scripted. Who was it that somebody asked in the Curfew Boys in our group chat, saying, "Who do you think is gonna win the NFL the Super Bowl?" And I answered Taylor Swift because it's fucking true. Like, it's what kind of script would that be if the Kansas City Chiefs go to the Super Bowl and Taylor Swift is there? Like, fuck, all of her fans, that half of them that probably, if they don't know nothing about football, what do you think they're going to be doing more than anything?
It's going to be the highest
rating. The shit out of everybody.
It'll be the highest televised Super Bowl in Super Bowl history because of her.
Most likely because of her. She just brought in a whole set of revenue for the NFL. But
then again, this is where I believe that it's scripted. Like, I'm sorry.
Well, that's what I'm saying. What a script that would be if Taylor Swift wins the Super Bowl.
Like, I like Taylor Swift. I'm not going to take away her talent because I think she's very talented, and she one of the best years of her life now with the tour and everything and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I get it. But years back, I'm sorry, but when Brady was getting married to Giselle, I think Giselle was one of the, you know, Victoria's Secret, fucking the angel of and didn't make a big fucking stink out of it. That could have brought a whole new girl era there to watch football because Giselle was there. Did you ever see the camera on Giselle? No. John Bon Jovi,
the music,
Patriots game. John Bon Jovi, can maybe not now, but before, he was a fucking top rock star of the world. And you think the camera goes on John Bon Jovi every fucking second? No, you see him once at the beginning, say hi to John Bon Jovi, and then that's it, and you move on. Fucking Eminem was in the Super game. Did you see fucking Eminem all fucking game? No, you saw him one time. You know, and that's it.
He's a Detroit fan. It's true. Yeah, he's from Michigan. It's true. Anyways, football playoffs is on the way. So yeah, we gotta talk a little bit about our Canadians. Listen, I think I think we're cursing this team a little bit because every time there's a back-to-back game, at least the last 2 weeks, a back-to-back game against a weaker team, the Curfew Boys are recording an episode during the game of the seg of the back-to-back versus a weaker team, and they're losing. It happened last week against the Sharks when Zouk and Joey were on, and it seems to be happening right now against the Ottawa Senators. It's now 4-1 for the Senators.
Starting the third.
In the third period. Oh, no. Actually, here, breaking news. It's now 5-1. They just scored right now. I'm not making this shit up. They literally just scored right now. It's 5-1 Ottawa Senators with 18 minutes and 19 seconds left. Anthony, yeah, this game reminds me. Remember when we went
to Ottawa?
Yeah. During our year in college, we went with those two, you know who?
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't reveal names and genders either. But they played a terrible game. They lost 3-0. Hasek was in nets. The Canadiens only took 3 shots all game. Like, this game is kind of reminding me of that.
This is not a good game.
I feel bad for Primo, man.
Primo has not been playing well by any means.
No.
You want to get into goalie talk right away? Because the press conference was a lot about the goal. He asked that question like 4 times.
Hold on, because we're definitely going to talk about it. We have to talk about Kent Hughes' press conference, but I just put a pin on it because we got a lot to talk about from what Kent Hughes said. Listen, take away what's been going on. Takeaway what's been going on this game. Listen, the last 3 games, the Canadiens have been playing good hockey.
Yeah.
Like, they lost in overtime versus the Oilers. Like, they kept up with them. The game against Colorado was amazing. They played fantastic game the other night. We're Thursday night. Wednesday night against the Devils. Man, like, they were in charge of that game from start to finish. Just take away the 2 goals on the power play, that double minor by Nick Suzuki. Just take those two goals away from the Devils. But the Canadiens never lost control of that game. They had full control of the game.
Full control. And you had said something yesterday in the group chat about they weren't scared. They were in front of that puck. They were blocking shots. They were taking hits. They were like hustling. It was just a good game to watch yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's Marty said this. The game when they lost against the San Jose Sharks, like in his press conference, he's like, we kind of been getting away from our game. And he looked at everyone with like this serial killer look. He looked at all the reports like, we're going to get back to the game. We're going to get back into playing our games. Like, trust me. And like, he had this threatening, murderous look on his face, and hey man, the boys responded. It's 4 games now in a row. Caulfield has a goal. I mean, he scored against the Senators tonight. He's got the only goal for the Canadiens. But that's like, I know Chris was one of them that was really concerned about Cole. I hope this is the Cole Caulfield that we've been wanting to see, and I like to think he's back.
I hope so, because it's unfortunate, because like, we started this season, the first episode of this season was, we predicted at least 2 30-goal scorers. We said Suzuki and Caulfield were hitting 30, and both are far from it, right? So hopefully they wake up and get a second better half of the season. But like you said, Caulfield is waking up finally. I think he's playing with the right people. That line's amazing. I know you guys spoke about it many times. Slaf and Suzuki is just another level. Slaf is finally waking up. He's becoming the player we all want him to be. Not there yet fully, but he's there. He's getting there. And again, he's playing with the right people, right chemistry.
Well, that pass that Caulfield made to him, that mid-air reverse pass, it's kind of like a lacrosse pass if you think about it.
It was
beautiful.
But then again, how many times what did I tell you beginning of the season? I said, this is the year where we have to, like, there was one episode that I was getting mad about the lines being fucking switched left, right, and center. You know, like, it wasn't working for 5 minutes, boom, let's change it up. And I said, just put the players together, give it a chance. give it a chance and see it. You can't build chemistry in 5 minutes. You got to build that chemistry over time. And they weren't doing that. But then finally they put Slav on the first line. They gave him a chance. They gave him a couple of games like that. And guess what? Now it's an official line.
I don't see how you could ever break up that line.
No, you can't. Right now.
For the rest of the season, at least.
Well, that's if they're consistent, yes.
Well, I mean, I know they're halfway there. But yeah, go, Chris.
Until they trade for Zegras.
Listen.
No.
You know what? Hold on. You might have to put a pin on that, but like come next year, let's say we have a healthy Doc and a healthy Newhook. I still don't see Slavkovsky leaving cold. Everything okay?
Yeah.
All good. Nothing's broken.
I mean, something fell in the garage, but it's all good.
That's okay. Just don't think about it right now. Just focus on us. So yeah. I seriously don't. I don't see how Marty could separate those three anymore. I mean, I know I say anymore, and I'm probably getting way ahead of myself. But
it changes in 2 games from now.
It's the only consistent line that's generating both offense and contributing even on defense. And again, just put aside this game tonight against the Senators. Let's just pretend this game doesn't exist. Unfortunately, it will. But like at one point, like a lot of us, not that we forgot about Cole Caulfield, but Slavkovsky was taken over. Slavkovsky took over the show on that line. It was his show. And you know, Nick Suzuki does his thing, but next year, when Newhook and Doc are back, you got to find them a winger. Now, is that winger Josh Anderson? Is it going to be somebody else through a trade? Maybe, Chris? But,
I just don't see Slavkovsky leaving. I think it's going to be one hell of a great like trade deadline and offseason. Much like Joey, I don't know why, but like free agency and that period of the year is just, for me, the absolute best.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's not shy to walk across my keyboard, but
we got collapses in garages. We got fucking animal interference. I'm losing camera signal. It's just not our night tonight. It's just we're losing 5-1.
It's the unprofessional podcast tonight.
Taylor Swift's talk. Fucking
but, yeah, no, Taylor but all... cursed us.
Look, we'll leave it at there are a few little mishaps on this episode, but in all honesty, I genuinely think that this is going to be one of the more exciting, if not most exciting, off seasons potentially.
Mm-hmm.
I think the trade deadline, look, we're 6 weeks away. You know, Kent Hughes, you have to realize, like, Sean Monahan, and that name has come up a lot, and some of the biggest insiders have openly, it's not even insiders, Kent Hughes openly said it, but we posted earlier today, what's Sean Monahan's worth? If a first round pick and a second round pick or top end prospect is the cost, I hope everybody realizes that the next moves that might be made, if they are like this, they will make or break. They might shape the Montreal Canadiens to be a competitive force for years to come. So, you know, let's cross our fingers for some good luck. I'm not opposed to Zegras. I'm not against Zegras. I think Kent Hughes, the only thing, I don't know if Zegras fits into the personality mold, funny enough. There's so much that we could extract from Marty's press conferences, from Kent's press conferences, but all to say, like, I'm just – all around, very excited with the offseason moves, with the free agents and the trades upcoming. All to say, the Montreal Canadiens might be looking completely different. And then you factor in, like you're mentioning, Sam, Doc coming back, Newhook coming back. A little bit less Newhook, but Doc coming back is just, it completely changes this whole team.
Dude, but Newhook too, before he went down, he was maybe our only consistent goal scorer.
Yeah, and he had the most goals per game, I think, out of all players on the team.
Yeah. So I totally agree. But you know what? I say screw it. I say we get right into it. let's just go for it, man. Like,
well, he talks a lot about, you know, what we've said so many times in this podcast about trading for players who have the experience already and have that progression, like a new hook. He said it. He's like, we have 22 draft picks. In that ideal world, we'll be using them all. But it doesn't work that way. And maybe we can use that for a pick like new hook or Doc. So he still has that mindset of building a team from draft picks to get players who are already established in the NHL. And he said that twice in the press conference when asked. And he also talks a lot about how much depth we have in our D side, right? And that could also be used for if the player is right. Anything to make the team better. So even though he indirectly says, he keeps saying, you know, we're going to, I'm not going to talk about trade deadline. Anything can happen. It's going to be last minute. We don't know what that week holds. He also like brought it the example of Nashville and Washington last year where they were not buyers or sellers. And then out of nowhere, they became buyers last day, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Happen,
you know, the team, I know, I think I'm speaking the whole fucking press conference. Sorry. But,
no, it's fine. No, but like there's a bunch of questions I have actually regarding what he said, but you finish your point. Yeah, but like, there's still a lot more to add to it.
Yeah, I really just to conclude what I'm trying to say is that, and I've said this many times, and you said it, we all said it. It's just I love the way this guy talks, and I love the vision this team has. They're not making us promises. They're not sharing everything, but you can tell what their vision is.
Well, there's still transparency there. There's still transparency, even without giving full details of what
exactly. And that's what I like, and I also like their vision. I like the vision of this team, and we've always said, and I've said this so many times. We don't need. And sorry, don't kill me, Joey. We don't need the talented elite players.
But it's a big. It's a big. It's really become a big topic. Like yes, it used to be a big topic amongst us as friends, but now it's really gone to like they're asking Marty about it. They're asking
and what did Hughes respond? And what did Hughes respond?
Well,
he said, I'll talk about a player that I presented, I represented, which is Bergeron. Yeah. He was not a point per game player, but he had one season
where he had one or two seasons. For the life of me, I can't remember by heart, but he did have one or two. But for the majority of his career, no, he was not. He was not. He might have been a point per game player, but here in Montreal, we seem to have this misconception of what is an elite player. The thing is, you got to look at not only what Cantu said, but I know Chris is going to want to talk about, but what Marty said as well. And that's the thing. Like, what are the last elite player maybe for the city of Montreal was Patrick Roy, was not a player. He's a goalie. Maybe before him was, the little Viking. Oh my God. What's his name? Oh, fuck me. I'll get back to him. But we're talking about Guy Lafleur, who was the elite player in the 70s, but in the 80s, it was, oh my God, guys, help me out here. Well, he was the last 50 goal scorer. He was probably an elite goal scorer at that time. Hold
on, see, but we have to stop thinking about elite and comparing. You know what it is? Your misconception. You're saying the elite to the eyes of Montreal or everybody, like Joey,
are the Crosby, McDavid, the Matthews, yes,
and the McDavids. Yes, they're elite, but they're rare elites. You can also get another elite. That's not like. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be a McDavid and a fucking. It's nice to have. I think they're bonuses to have on your team, but you can get an established elite player in a different way. Anyways, go. Sorry, Joey.
Matt Snazlin. That's who I was thinking of. Maybe the last guy that was elite, and even at that, like he wasn't. He was popular, but it was just for that small amount of time. But Matt Snazlin, was he elite? Like for us, Kovalev was elite because he had 84 points in 82 games. That like, but was he really elite to the Crosbys and the Matthews and like, maybe not at that time. He was probably a little bit past his prime, but like he was still a beast. He was our like probably all of our favorite players here.
Well, side note, I don't know if you remember this, but you do know that you and I went to Kovalev's first Montreal game.
Yo, right? 1,000%. I remember. I made a sign. It was garbage. Like
we went to the bottom.
Yeah, we were at the bottom when you were allowed. Yeah,
had the
I remember.
Sign and he was the first. We went to the first.
We went to his very first game in Montreal. Yeah, of course I remember that. Yeah. But there's many things that came out of Marty's press conference, and he only did it like in 20 minutes, and yet he revealed quite a bit of things. That's it could go either or, but it all points into the same direction, and it's really to bring this team as contenders, and not just hopefully for one time, but like I'm gonna let Chris talk about Marty's quote on what is elite. So Chris, you take over that part, and I'm gonna come back with something else. So
well, there's the elite player tags, and then it's basically the two clips that we put out. It's the elite player tags and it's the culture. I actually rather focus on the culture part of things, because I think you guys, there's no point in reiterating what you guys just said, which is it's not only going to be points. You look at Patrice Bergeron, he influenced the whole outcome of a game. If they needed to basically shut down the game and hold a lead, you had a superstar defensive player just as much as he could make killer plays, was a great like visionary on the ice. And assisted everybody that he made everybody that he played with better.
Yeah,
that's an elite player. And again, was he the top point scorer in pretty much any season that he played? And no. And I'm very much appreciating. I guess I'll wrap up that point of the elite player tags. It seems as though Marty's looking to have a grouping of players that are all bringing something to the table, but they also do everything very well. And I think it was very telling with, I remember standing in front of the TV and listening when he was talking specifically about Cole Caulfield. So he went down the path of saying, well, Cole's not scoring right now, and he's going through it. He's going through, I guess, his learning experience right now of how to be a better player all around. But have we not noticed Cole Caulfield has become a better defensive player? Let's put aside the lacrosse pass. It was an amazing pass, but Cole Caulfield is making more passes and more plays. Mm-hmm. He's not a unilateral player. He's not just going to be a goal scorer. And I love the fact that Marty's just like, you guys all see Cole Caulfield as this goal scorer, but he's so much more than a goal scorer. And that I think was very, very telling. But to be 100% honest and shift into the other element, when he started speaking about culture, I think this ties in not only Kent's press conference, not only Marty's press conference, but also a lot of things that were going on around the league. And I think it was very telling for one player in particular that we don't talk about overwhelmingly often. But with Cutter Gauthier getting traded, you actually found out that a lot of teams were pushing to go for very likely David Reinbacher.
Yep.
And David Reinbacher, when you talk about culture and like the foundation of the team, my God, we're jumping between subjects of so many episodes. I apologize for that.
It's all intertwined, though. It's all connected.
But that was kind of like everything coming together. And I really thought about it. We drafted some very talented players like Alex Galchenyuk. We drafted Kotkaniemi, who they were all very good. But at the end of the day, are these guys who are going to put the team first? Are these guys going to fight for one another and battle for one another? Are these going to be the guys who are going to take cuts to their salary to make sure that they could bring on another star player? And you basically, it very much seems as though the Montreal Canadiens are filtering out players that are attracted to the outside noise and the problems off the ice. They're filtering guys out who are very selfish players when it comes to not only salary and the business side of things, but also how they're going to be as players on the ice. And slowly but surely, you're cutting out the locker room cancers. You're cutting out the off-ice problems. You're cutting out division between the group. And you're bringing together a whole group of guys that are going to be very well balanced all around. And you know what? That's a team, and teams win you cups. So like you bring everything together. Those press conferences that you're saying, it was a very, very telling press conference. And I remember standing, especially the Marty press conference after Kent had spoken. I remember standing in front of the TV and just going like, holy shit, this guy's going to do it. This guy's going to literally change the culture of the Montreal Canadiens, and they are going to have, I think, Boston 2.0. I genuinely, as much as I hate to say it, there's going to be Boston 2.0.
No, but it's 1,000%. But it helps when you have a Jeff Gorton who was part of the management group for years before he went to the Rangers. It's 1,000, and it's exactly what the Boston Bruins did. It's exactly what Patrice Bergeron did. He took a major pay cut so they could attract other guys, other star players. We'll use that term. You could pay them, yet you're not getting handcuffed a la fucking Toronto Maple Leafs right now, especially with that Nylander contract. Okay, so that Nylander contract. It's 1,000% that. Like, and Nick Suzuki. After that, after Kent Hughes' press conference, like Anthony said, like Nick Suzuki might not be a point of game player, but neither was, like, dude, Nick Suzuki played like Patrice Bergeron. Nick Suzuki looked like Patrice Bergeron against the Oilers, against the Avalanche, especially, even against the Devils. He looked fantastic. Yeah. Building a winning culture. That's what Marty wants, a winning culture. And in order to build a winning culture, you need to have those good character players.
Yeah.
And that's why
a la Anthony's saying. It's for sure. For sure. 1,000%.
We don't know him as much, and it's such a small moment. But look, call me crazy. David Reinbacher signing his contract, calling his parents, crying on the phone or on the FaceTime. That's not the most telling thing, but it's still, in my opinion, it's still something telling about his character.
Apparently he's the nicest kid in the world.
Yeah, they're like good. I feel as though they're genuinely good human beings. I'm not going to get into the drug content and the problems off the ice, but I feel as though we've had some talented players. They've had ties to like organized crime. They've had ties to
drug abuse. Montreal,
crashing cars, fucking after, you know,
after partying, God knows where in the city.
No.
Well, it's such a harsh reality that drugs like cocaine and painkillers. And listen, we're the city of Montreal. We all know we have one of the best nightlives in at least in Canada. And you know, if you're a heterosexual male and you go out, then there's heterosexual women out there. They know who you are in Montreal. They know who you play for. There's an attraction there, and it could be a distraction as well. It's a reality with Montreal, but it's a reality with all athletes and all celebrities. I understand that. But in terms of hockey and in terms of one of the biggest markets in the sport, in the NHL, this is not unknown. But I think for once this organization have the right people in the office and within the staff to make sure these kids they don't lose focus. They don't get off track. Like, again, yeah, they're young kids. Yes, you're going to let them live their life. At the end of the day, they're adults, right? They're going to do kind of what they want. But at least we have people now that kind of like guides them. And if they see that, oh, they might be veering off a little bit, they're going to bring them back into a straight path. And like, but like having guys like a GM like Kent Hughes, having a head coach like Marty, you know, Shantan Maccabee, who's well-respected, Jeff Gorton, like we have the right people. And man, going back to the David Reinbacher, teams wanted him for a reason. And I like to think we picked him because of what he's going to bring in his game, but also what he's going to bring to his team within the locker room. Like it goes with what Anthony's been saying this whole time. It's all about character.
And I think we have to be careful because, and all these valid points that you're saying, but I'm a bit contradictive here, but I love that we're building from a young core. Like, we're gonna build a team from the beginning. So having all these young players play together, it's beautiful because they're gonna be growing up together, if you want to say.
Yeah, and they that's are. How
you build chemistry. The only negative about that, if we don't find a good veteran to come in,
I think they will. I think Kent Hughes and Jeff Gordon and even Marty, they know the importance of a veteran or two. I think so.
Because, like you said before, we're in a city where party life and all that stuff. And if we're going to have too many young players that are inexperienced and living this kind of life with the contracts coming in and the party life that they have, it can go off the rail, right?
Yeah, that's true.
But yes and no, right? Because these young players are going to be learning together with the right people like Marty and stuff. So maybe they'll learn from that. But
hopefully, but I get it. And this is why, like, now we could probably talk about the Sean Monahan subject. This is why I'm on the fence here with letting Sean Monahan go. Like, I really am. Like, I know we're going to get a good return for him, but at the end of the day, you're letting go of a veteran that's like been a bit of like an older brother figure to these kids. So it's tough, man. It's tough. But like you said, Chris, we posted it on our Instagram page. Yeah. The asking price is a first round pick or a second round pick and prospect. It makes absolute sense. And I think contending teams like Winnipeg, like maybe Colorado, I think even Boston maybe might be in the mix too. They might pay for it. If they feel like Sean Monahan could be a depth missing piece at center to help them go far in the playoffs and hopefully win a cup, teams will pay for it. But that veteran leadership, yeah, Anthony, I agree. Like, even David Savard, I couldn't even believe Joey said it. He probably doesn't want to get rid of Savard right now because of he's a mentor to the defenseman. Like, sometimes Joey could change his mind too, and he catches us all off guard. It's amazing. Miracles do happen. But
Patriots fan, yeah.
One day he'll be a Patriots fan. That'll be a major miracle. I really hope Joey's listening to this right now, man. And it's too bad that you and him can't be on the same episode right now. Like, guys, we really got to contact the scheduling department of this podcast. Possibly, but yeah, it's gonna be interesting. Hold on, somebody scored. Who scored? Did Michael Pezzetta score? Oh my god! Michael Pezzetta. Too bad he doesn't have an assist. It'd be a Gordie Howe hat trick. Pezzetta with a fight and now a goal. Let's go!
Beautiful fight at that.
Representing that the Italians. That's it. On what the breakaway, on his knees.
No, that wasn't him.
No, yeah, you're right. No, that's not him.
What the fuck? Did you see that? Look at that guy's face.
That was Ghoulie. Oh, it was Ghoulie.
The fan. Anthony, you're talking about the fans there.
I can't believe they're going to lose against the Ottawa Senators. Anyways, back to Kent Hughes' press conference.
You know what else we're talking
about? It's pretty much, you know how TSN does the top five trade baits and all that, their trade alerts. The top five is Sean Monahan and Jake Allen.
Okay, so speaking of goalies, well, I don't know if I want to get to goalies yet because we're talking about defensemen and players, but he brings up Struble a lot, saying that it was a
big surprise.
It was a big surprise that he advanced faster than they expected.
Yep.
Well, he kept saying that. Absolutely. And then we keep talking about depth and we talk about Struble. And I don't know. I have a feeling in which I'm not happy about. Because I'm scared. Look, I think we're in the right hands with Gorton and Hughes. But we have such a good depth right now. And I've got a lot of young, talented players and potential players to come up that I'm scared if we make the wrong move.
Well, did you think of an example? What would be a wrong move for you? Let me ask you this on the fly.
It's a McDonough. A McDonough and what's his name?
That's another.
But Ryan McDonough,
other guys that made that shit.
But yeah, exactly. It's different management. Ryan McDonough, I don't remember paying attention to him in his junior years or his college years. But right now we're seeing we're really seeing what these prospects are doing. Like, we're seeing Struble with the NHL, but we're also seeing, you know, what Jack Eichel's doing in Laval, what Mayu's doing in Laval, what Lane Hudson is doing in college. It's hard to see what Adam Engström is doing in, I think he's playing in Sweden. It's hard to see. The Russian kid in the KHL is killing it too. And he's a right-handed defenseman as well. We're not really talking about him much. But out of all these prospects or all of these defensemen on the depth chart, who are you afraid of? Who are you afraid they're going to get rid of or trade that you don't really want to see go? Is there any player in any specific player like for me? I hope they don't trade Jack Eichel and I hope they don't trade Struble.
But see, I think Struble would be a good move business wise because no. Saying business-wise, I don't want to lose Struble because he's playing fantastic. But now you just, you know, woke up a couple of managers out there, GMs out there saying, oh, shit, who is this guy? And Hughes kept saying that he wants to trade to make this team better. Now, it's hard to use as, like, someone in the depth chart. It's all projections or maybes or what's going to happen, right? But Struble already surpassed that projection. Right now he's at that point where, oh shit, this guy is good. So when it comes to sitting on the table on trade deadline or July 1st and you want to pick up a player to make your team better and you want to trade for someone in return well, then you're gonna have to trade someone like Struble, right? Because now you caught that attention to the other GMs compared to trading him for a cannot lead Hudson, but I don't know, give me a Ryan Backer. No one knows him yet. He's good. He was a good draft, but he hasn't really showed us what he's capable of doing in the NHL level. So,
no, at least in North America, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So now when it's time to make a decision or make a move. Okay, I want, I don't know, give me an established player in the league right now.
We'll throw in Trevor Zegras right now.
Okay, Zegras or Jack Hughes, okay? Just I know it's never gonna happen, but
okay.
Now you want someone like Hughes? Well, I want Struble, not Ryan Backer, because Ryan Backer hasn't shown what he's capable of doing. Struble did. So that's what scares me, right? I'm scared of, and I know we're in the right hands, like I said before, with Gorton and Hughes, that we're not going to pull a Bergevin. They're not going to get rid of a good elite or good player for something shit. Mm-hmm. I know that we're going to get something good in return. But what scares me is that one day, you know, we'll have this conversation like, fuck, this guy was in our team. You know, like, I don't want to get to that
point. No, I see what you mean. And I think one thing they're going to avoid doing, is they're not going to trade. They're trading a future for the future, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So, and a lot of these trades are going to come from, they're going to include draft picks. You're trading potential futures for a young player that's still a future player, like a New Hook and like a Doc. And he said in the press conference, look, we traded Romanov because we had so much depth. It came to a surprise as everyone. But we traded him for someone that we feel is going to help benefit this team at the center position long term. It's going to be exactly like that. He did the exact type of trade to get Doc. He did pretty much almost the same trade to get New Hook. I'm expecting a kind of trade like that. Now, a lot of people are there like, well, there's only so many draft picks you can get in return. It's like, yeah, then you could also use those draft picks to trade for an established young player. And again, the fact of the matter is that player has to fit the credentials and the criteria of character players, winning culture, team first mentality. So yeah,
that's why I don't think Zegras. I'll be honest, I don't think Zegras is the guy that qualifies. In all honesty, like I don't know if you guys ever seen Fast Times at Ridgemont High, very old movie, but that movie, there's this fucking druggy, degenerate. It's Sean Penn, but like a young Sean Penn.
Okay.
And he's just always smoking pot. I swear to God, search it up. Fast Times at Ridgemont High. And the guy, the character's name is Spicoli. It's fucking Trevor Zegras. It's literally Trevor Zegras.
Okay.
Do yourselves a favor and have a good laugh. But I want to go back to, Anthony, what you're saying. You were worried about, let's say, losing a particular player. I think we might look and go like, oh, my God, this player turned out to be quite good in the NHL, and he had a great career at the end of it all. But I think no matter what, at the end of the day, these trades are going to be made to go get whatever missing pieces. And I'm going to say this: I think the first two names, and I'm going to commit to it and stick with it. Jordan Harris and Barron are going to be two young defensemen. Those I think are your trade pillars.
Same.
Like significant trade pillars. I don't think Struble. I think Struble has officially made Harris completely tradable.
And the other guy, expendable.
That's the word I was looking for. And the other guy who's currently, and I'm so happy to see him turn everything around, but people kind of stopped talking about it. You look at Logan Mailloux in the minors going to the All-Star game, but he's becoming more and more and more dominant. And like that, to me, I genuinely feel as though Barron is going to have no use whatsoever. And then you have, I swear to God, the top two right-handed defensemen are going to be Reinbacher and Mailloux. And then at the end of the day, if you want to have a sixth defenseman, you have like a more of like a Kovacevic type player. You have Adam Engstrom. Adam Engstrom is a left-handed defenseman. You have we have all these other defensemen that at the end of the day, even if Jordan Harris goes to another team, performs well, I guarantee you Jordan Harris is much more likely to bring the missing piece to the Montreal Canadiens. And I'm not saying fucking Trevor Zegras for Jordan Harris. That's not going to happen. But I'm just saying Jordan Harris might be a part of a trade that's going to end up going for even a support player, a very good support player, a very good veteran player. We're going to lose Monahan, but when the time comes, I could easily see that switch happening.
Absolutely. Well said. Here, let me play devil's advocate here. But what if, you know, Trevor Zegras is very good friends with Cole Caulfield. He sees the culture that is being built here. What if, again, this is all hypothetical here, but what if a player like Zegras, who's friends with Cole, knows, you know, Nick Suzuki as well, knows Caden Gooley as well, knows that Marty is the head coach and well respected. What if this environment that we have going on right now? If I personally don't believe that Trevor Zegras has an attitude problem. I could be wrong. There's a possibility that he is an arrogant little shit
problem.
It's possible. What if him coming to a team like here is the missing piece in his game to give him those winning habits?
Yeah.
And I'm asking the question.
No, but at the same time, I owe Trevor Zegras an apology, because if you were to let's say compare Trevor Zegras to Cole Caulfield, I don't think there's a significant difference. Cole Caulfield is a very loud, very bubbly personality.
Well, dude, they grew up together. They developed together in the National Development League in the States. They won the gold medal together. Like they grew up together with Jack Hughes, man. They're all close.
You know what? 100%. 100%. Just for your devil's advocate point. Sorry, I cut you, Anthony. But just for your devil's advocate point that you mentioned, number one, I owe Zegras an apology. Like, I don't know him. And he's I don't know him. I'm not going to pretend to know him. And he doesn't, if you really compare him, he doesn't seem that much different than Caulfield. And again, if Marty could properly manage his assets, which are the players, and keep them in check, and then you have proper mentors in place, yeah, the sky's the limit with these young guys. You can really shape them and make them grow into fantastic human beings.
Yeah, because Kent Hughes does want that he wants that. He said, do we need help up front? Yeah, we kind of do. Are we looking for a player like that? Yeah, but the trade has to make sense. If there's a good deal in play that makes sense for both teams, but at least for the Canadians, makes sense for them, that's going to help this team and what they're building, yeah, he's gonna pull the trigger.
That's what he had mentioned. Even if you want to jump into the goalie talk, that he brought that up also. You know, I think that question was asked fucking three times. Like, shut the fuck up. I get it. But he answered. But, you know, he did say that his plan was not to have three goalies till the end of the season.
That's correct, yeah.
That is still the plan, but he's not going to just get rid of him just to get rid of him. He said all three goalies are playing very well, surprisingly. He compared that to the Struble thing. He's like, I didn't think all three goalies would be performing. So, again, a good problem to have. And I find this year, this team, finally, we're having a lot of problems, but good fucking problems. You know, we never had that luck to have a lot of good problems. And sometimes having good problems can lead to making mistakes. And that's my only concern. You know, like, we have so many good problems of having all this depth. Now, we're going to have to get rid of this depth eventually. Are we going to get rid of the right ones? Or if we do get rid of the right ones, are we going to get the right ones in return? And then you can say, okay, oh shit, I had this guy on my team, but I have this guy better. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, but I don't think we're going to see another Sergachev situation. At least we hope not.
I hope.
And not. Even at the Sergachev-Drouin situation, which, by the way, like, I'm not laughing at the situation. Like, I couldn't believe that fans would actually boo him when he touched the puck. They gave him a beautiful standing ovation with the welcome back tribute, and then they started booing him again. I find it kind of.
I know it's easy to play well on Colorado. It's much easier to play when you're playing beside Nathan MacKinnon, but just his engagement. Like, when did we see? We used to see that one in every like 20 games where he was very.
Yeah, I know.
He was skating and that's the frustrating part.
Thing. I totally agree, but that was the best thing for his career, was getting the fuck out of here, man. Go play with MacKinnon. Like, he's away from the media attention. Fucking maybe playing up in higher altitude will fucking help him out, which looked like it did. You know, he's on a hot streak too. But all that to say was, yeah, that trade. I think a lot of us still have PTSD from the Sergachev-Drouin trade. But what has fans need to realize is that Sergachev was never going to be a number one on this team, the number one defenseman on this team. He could have been the number two, the number three, definitely top four. But like, getting rid of McDonough was bad, because McDonough could have been the number one defenseman or the number two, not Sergachev. And I'll tell you this, folks. When Tampa Bay won the cup, okay, Ryan McDonough was number two on that team, not Sergachev. So I'm just saying, and I'm not taking anything away from Sergachev. He's obviously injured this year, but he's a solid defenseman. There's no question about it. Solid two-way defenseman. You could probably give him a second power play unit. Yeah. But the way Has fans made him out to be is that, like, oh my God, we got rid of our next superstar defenseman. It's like, no, not really. No matter what happens, in the end, yes, we did lose that trade. Of course, it ended up working out well for Tampa. But it also helps when you're playing behind a Victor Hedman, when you're playing behind a Ryan McDonough. Like, I'm just saying, I'm taking nothing away from Sergachev, but he wasn't going to be the star that we all thought he was going to be for this team. Like, and
not to separate the fact that his team won the cup, he wasn't the reason why they won the cup.
Not at all. He look, all things considered, he played well when he had to, for sure. But he wasn't their superstar defenseman that they were relying on. He was just one of the pieces. Yeah. So I think Ant's like, I understand the worry, but this is a different mindset within the management. Like,
like I said before, I'm worried, yes, but we're in the right hand, so I'm not that worried. But back to like the goalie talk. I know I went from goalie straight to
back. Yeah,
how that happened, but he had said it. So yeah, just to rephrase it, just to go back to what I was saying, he had said the plan was not to get rid of to keep three to the end. He didn't expect it to be at this stage of the game and still have three. But it's obvious that the price is not right yet, right? And I think what helped him still not making this decision is that he sees the potential these three goalies are giving him. And he's playing it right. He's playing it smart. you know, something like Benjamin, he probably would have got rid of him, one of them. Actually, you know what, Benjamin probably would have put Primo on waivers. That's for sure.
Well, it's confirmed. He would have gotten picked up.
He had mentioned that, Hughes. But I'm saying that the mistake that our old manager would have made was he would have been on waivers and or would have traded him for something fucking stupid. Now Hughes is playing very smart. He's playing his cards right. He's holding the cards to his chest and saying, okay, you want my goalie? Because I'm sure he's getting a bunch of fucking calls on a daily basis.
I have a feeling they got a deal in place and they're just waiting to see
it gets sweeter.
I think they might have a verbal agreement with some other GM, and they say, let me just wait and see what we look like come February. Like, give us end of January, beginning of February, see how our team looks like, and we might have a deal here, just to see. Because, like, look, how many teams now have fucking goalie troubles right now? A lot of teams are like, a good solid goalie's all we're missing to really help us secure a spot in the playoffs, and then we'll see where we go from there. I think he has something. I really do. It's a gut feel. I can't confirm. I just have this gut feel, man. He's got something in the works.
You just said it. How many teams are having goalie problems? So yeah, if
Toronto,
there's so many,
how many playoff teams?
What I'm trying to say is this. You're right. There's a lot, and he knows this. If us schmucks here from fucking RDP and Laval and Cineard are saying that the other fucking teams have, here, shut up. But if we know this other team's having trouble, he knows as well. Now,
of course,
teams are starting to get desperate, right? Now, everybody knows that Montreal has three goalies. Everybody knows we want to get rid of one. And we know there's a lot of teams struggling. So because Hughes is a smart guy, guess what? Let me get as close as possible to the trade deadline. Let me get these teams more and more desperate, because we haven't seen or heard a goalie trade lately. We haven't seen one yet.
Nothing.
And there's a lot of teams that want one. So get closer to trade deadline. A team that's contending is really in need of a goalie. Guess what? Okay, I'm going to give you Matthews for Allen. I know you know what I mean. So desperate that they're going to get rid of something more than that they could have gotten.
A lot of teams are waiting to see what they look like. I think they're going to wait and see what they look like beginning of February till mid February, because the trade deadline is March 8th.
Yeah.
Friday, March 8th. So around that time, that's where you're gonna see, maybe you might start seeing moves being made, and who knows, it might happen before trade deadline where everyone's just fucking starting making the phone calls here. But I think everybody's concerned, Anthony, more than anything, is not that the wrong moves gonna be made. I think they're worried about, again, another form of PTSD we have are the injuries. Especially, we know that Sean Monahan is a bit injury prone, like Allen as well. I think that's what fans are, and maybe even media members are a little bit more afraid of. It's like, you know, why not trade them while they're healthy? Like, God forbid if something happens to them next week or like a couple of weeks before the deadline. So
yeah, but that's, look, I think, and I said it a while back on one of the episodes. I think they're better off rolling the dice and trying to create a bidding war, because there's going to be one stupid team that's going to make one, you know, move that's miscalculated, hopefully, and we benefit for years to come. I think I'm hoping and praying to God that there's another like Martin Erat for Philip Forsberg type trade that ends up occurring. You know, that happened at the deadline, and that was such a horrible, horrible, horrible move for Washington.
Yeah.
And look, fingers crossed. But the one thing I want to go back to, because Anthony, you made me think of it. You know, Marc Bergevin always used to talk about character, and you know, even I'll go as far as back as Bob Gainey. I think we used to want to bring, like, we're talking about Jonathan Drouin for Sergachev and this and that and the other. And I want to come kind of full circle, I guess, in saying that I don't think there's this pressure anymore, number one. And I think Kent Hughes has, in a certain way, addressed it. But I don't think there's a pressure anymore to just get these French-Canadian players at any cost, or these Quebec-based players at any cost that come with... Look at what's going on with Pierre-Luc Dubois.
Oh my God.
Everybody now is kissing...
Dodge the
bullet. It's a major bullet dodge. But was that something, again, we avoided a bad character. Jonathan Drouin, Verpas, as they said, whether you like it or not, this guy was sitting at home while his team was competing and going to play because he had issues with his coach. Like, we traded for that. Like, shame on us for
going down. You mean in Tampa Bay, like when he had the drama in Tampa Bay.
Yeah, exactly. When he was sent home from Tampa, Jonathan Drouin was a Tampa Bay Lightning player, and he was sent home. Like,
yeah, he had that attitude problem at the beginning of his career.
Shame on us. Like, why Marc Bergevin and even Bob Guiney, when he was going to go push? I'm not saying Vinny LeCavalier had any attitude issues, but I'm just saying we used to make stupid moves to please the fan base. Now I like, we have a chess player sitting behind the board moving the pieces and bringing in, especially like we're trading pawns for hopefully
a bishop. Like I was gonna say,
knights and rooks and queens and
some knights.
Exactly that. So all I'm gonna say is at the end of it all, especially for Anthony, like I don't see the comparable. I genuinely do not see the comparable. Like, everybody that we had in place was just like, oh yeah, this guy's a good player. This guy has it. But is it gonna mesh with our chemistry? Is he a good human being? Is this person gonna allow us to go get XYZ players after the fact? Is he gonna fucking milk us for the highest possible contract? You know, I'll even go as far as saying this. I think if Kent Hughes was in place when Carey Price was getting his contract, I don't think Carey Price even gets 10 million, as great as he was. Like, everything was just well calculated and not emotional and not to please the fans. It's to fucking go forward. And I have full faith. I know there are going to be bad moves, and I know there are going to be moves that don't pan out, and that's bound to happen. That's just the way life goes. But I do genuinely have faith. There we go again. I genuinely do have faith that we're going to be going, even if we take a step back, we're always going to be taking 2 to 3 to 4 steps forward.
Yeah. Anyways. Absolutely. No, it's like a cat drop. Anyways. Yeah. I totally agree. And like we see it in majority of the trades right now. Like, just the way he got rid of, you know, the Rem Pitlick, Mike Hoffman contracts, and then even the Jeff Petrie. Even though the Jeff Petrie for Lidstrom, it didn't really pan out. He got picked up on waivers. We still got a draft pick out of it. Who knows what we could use that one for? No, absolutely. Everything is well calculated. Everything is well calculated. So we'll see, but there's one player we do have to talk about that I think it's Anthony's favorite.
Yes. I'm so happy. Like, okay, I'm not going to lie. I'll be honest and transparent with all my fans out there. Our fans. I don't want to say my fans. My apologies. Our fans. I missed the last couple of games. Okay. Mm-hmm. Due to personal, like, busyness and stuff. But yesterday was the first game I actually finally sat down and watched it. And out of all games, he goes and scores first fucking goal. I was screaming. It reminded me of that whole Mete time, you know, when I was waiting for Mete to score.
Yeah. But like, listen, the kid looks, I mean, when he got called up, imagine he gets called up against fucking Edmonton. Congratulations. Your first NHL game is on a Saturday night at the Bell Center against Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, and the Edmonton Oilers. And you know, in that game, he showed shades of, like, you know, his playmaking abilities, his situational awareness. And then the game against Colorado, he got better. And then look what he did with New Jersey. Like, with New Jersey, he was we all say how, like, Slavkovsky, Caulfield, and even Suzuki were probably the best player. He wasn't far behind either. And he was the player that took the most shots on net. So, yeah, absolutely. Very, very, very happy for this kid. I still think, however, might be an unpopular opinion, but once Josh Anderson is ready to come back from his day-to-day little injury, I still think it's a good idea to send Roy back to Laval. I don't know what you got.
You're cutting off again, but yeah, I at this stage of the game, I agree with that point because, I mean, we are in a better position this year than last year in regards to making playoffs. So we still have hope, but we're still like at that, you know, it's not at a point where we're out of it completely. If we're out of it I don't know how to answer that question because I like the way he's playing. And with all the injuries in place, keep him a bit, give him some NHL experience. And then send him down when Anderson was back. But he did say something in the press conference. I want to bring this up. And I don't know if you guys caught this. Okay, sorry, I'm changing topic quickly. But I want to bring this up about Roy and Hughes' conference. Am I being, quote unquote, too sensitive because of this generation? Or do I have a point here? Hughes did say something along the lines like, you know, when they were talking about elite players. I don't know if you guys are remembering what I'm about to say, but they're talking about elite players. And he's like, well, you know, you can't compare, you know, having a player like Joshua Wall playing against McDavid and Draisaitl. I get what he was trying to say, but it was kind of downgrading to Wall, no? A little bit.
It's a rookie. He's a rookie. It's his first NHL game, and like there's high expectations for him, and because he's probably our best forward prospect right now. So I don't know.
He said it. I was like, if I was just at all, I'd be like, okay. But again, I said this in past episodes where the way Hughes talks, he can say anything the fuck he wants to say, downgrading not, but he comes across so mature and professional that like he could be so insulting, but it'll still come out smart and like validated, you know, like
complimentary.
Yeah, you know what I mean? But like I find it was a little downgrading when he said, like, you know, talk about elite players, there's not many Ovechkins and Crosbys and McDavids, and then like putting Wall on this in front of McDavid and Draisaitl, it was just not a good match. It's like a bit like, but I get it. I don't know. Maybe I'm overthinking it, but
I'm gonna look at the flip side of the coin, and I'm gonna say that number one, he's lowering expectations for that particular player, so taking pressure off of him. And whether you like it or not, at this very moment in time, if you're to compare Joshua Roy, I think even if Kent Hughes were to walk up, or a random reporter, anybody who doesn't even have Joshua Roy's respect, let's say. Random person goes up to Joshua Roy and says, are you in the same category as McDavid? Joshua Roy is going to laugh and say, what are you, fucking stupid? and in that case, that's like, I know that it's not the nicest thing. It's like saying, oh, this guy is not. It doesn't mean that he'll never be. He'll likely never be. But I think even Joshua Roy, in any given situation, I think any Montreal Canadian player could look at themselves in the mirror and say, I'm no Connor McDavid. I'm no Sidney Crosby. I'm no Alex Ovechkin. And that's that. Now,
I'll be an elite hockey player like Marty wants.
Yeah, exactly. I'll be an elite hockey player and that's it. But to go back to Sammy's question, I'm going to say without hesitation, send him down to Laval. Send him down to Laval when Anderson is ready to come back. Yeah. Why Laval is going on? I don't know if you I know that you guys don't, but Laval has been going on a tear. If they're going on a playoff run, I want Joshua Roy to be a part of that playoff run.
1,000%.
I want him to get that experience. And to be honest, like Joshua Roy, I think is going to very quickly, much like Raphaël Harvey-Pinard has. I think he's the next one to have his permanent spot on the team without question. Just I'm gonna go back to last episode and what Joey said. It's Kent Hughes, the biggest thing and the most exciting part about this offseason might just be offloading of more contracts. It's the next wave of Mike Hoffman's to offload. And
well, it's the Tanner Pearson that's gonna go for sure. Maybe the Armia or the Dvorak contract. Maybe
I don't want to agree with Joey because I really think Josh Anderson is a golden playoff player type guy that you have to have. But in all honesty, if we want to progress and we want to go the right direction, and Hughes is kind of, he's got his cards to his chest, so you don't know exactly what he's going to do, but he's clearly made mention of wanting to go get like a star or an elite player with goal scoring potential. Well, you're going to have, now officially you want that, you're going to have to get rid of a contract like Josh Anderson. So
yeah, it's just,
anyways,
it's,
long it's, answer.
It's, again, it's one of those things where it's like, it's that money that is off the cap in order to pay someone that's, because like Josh Anderson is 29 years old. I thought it was younger. Like he's getting, in terms of hockey age is concerned, like he's getting older, man. So the question is, like, how long could he keep this up? It's the same thing with Brendan Gallagher. Just the way they play, with the intensity they have in their game, it's how long could they keep this up for without getting injured and for the price that they come with? So, but I totally agree. I know some fans are not going to be happy with Joshua Roy going back down if they send him back down, and I really think they should, because in all honesty, my belief was they called him up because after they won last weekend, Laval's next game is Friday night, which is tomorrow. So he missed nothing in Laval. And Laval was able to have one game without him because they were playing a very weak Manitoba Moose team. So like they didn't need Joshua was for that game. And right now the Canadians are in a playoff spot. They're in a playoff spot right. Sorry, not the Canadians. Excuse me. My goodness. The Laval Rocket are in a playoff spot. And like I said, I totally think bring him back down. And I don't know why you're laughing, Chris. What the fuck you're smirking at? But
I'd love to end this episode off with a fucking just funny story. When you said Manitoba Moose, it's the stupidest story. It goes back to my Sejep days. It's completely random, not hockey related, but I'll send the fans off with a funny story that I guarantee it'll have them laughing.
Okay. Well, listen, I mean, that's pretty much all I got to say about the Joshua Roy talk, but I want to kind of, before Chris, you say your Manitoba Moose story. Look, the Professional Women's Hockey League has kicked off, and it's actually something I've been wanting to mention. I completely forgot last episode. I know the Montreal team are in second place. Marie Philippe Poulin being the captain, she's doing what she does best. Plays hockey very well. She's a feisty motherfucker, huh? Like, she's not afraid to fight, huh? Like, I love it. I think it's great. Like, I think, you know what? I think they should let the women drop the fucking gloves and fight too.
Oh yeah.
You know, they're delivering hits. Like, fuck, they're going at it. And honestly, like, great for them. Like, I'm happy for the women. They have their own league. It looks like it's going to be successful. I really hope it does. They have two rules that I actually want to ask you guys. They have two rules in this league that I find very intriguing. And one of them I've been wanting for the NHL to implement it in their game. I'll start with the first rule, like, which is not my least favorite, but whatever. If the NHL doesn't do it, it's not the end of the world. So in the PWHL, the Professional Women's Hockey League, you get a penalty. The player goes to the box, right? If you score a shorthanded goal, the player in the box comes out and the other team loses the power play. What do you guys think about that?
Love it.
Okay. You think the NHL...
I'll answer my question after you bring up the second rule, because it goes the same way. The answer is the same for both questions. So continue on and I'll give you my reasoning as to why.
Well, again, pretty cool. I don't know. Maybe I'm undecided. Maybe I'm neutral. It's cool that it seems if it works for the PWHL, I think the NHL is going to see how that works for them. And then maybe they'll think about it in their next collective bargaining agreement. The second rule, this is something now that I really want, is the points, how they get points for games that are won either in regulation. So they get 3 points for winning in regulation. They get 2 points for.
Wait, sorry, you get how many points? Sorry, go ahead.
Three. You get 3 points if you win in regulation. You win in 60 minutes, you get 3 points. You get 2 points if you win in overtime. You get, I think, you get 1 point if you lose in overtime or in shootout. And you obviously get 0 points when you lose in regulation. I actually like that.
You lose what, sorry?
So if you lose in
regulation,
you get no points if you lose in regulation, obviously. Yeah. Duh. And you get 1 point, you get 1 point if you lose in overtime and shootout. You get 2 points if you win in overtime, and you get 3 points if you win in regulation.
Okay, so it's the same like NHL. You're just getting an extra point in regulation. That's it.
No, it's basically
it's an extra point.
I'll give 3 points.
Yeah, it changes everything. Yeah,
it's like soccer in a sense.
Well, in a sense. Both. Okay, so my answer officially to your questions, I love both of them because it provides an incentive to perform and push harder and play better. Whether it be on the penalty kill, if you score a shorthanded goal, then you have to work harder and you're going to be more aggressive and pushing for those goals shorthanded. It's going to open up the game. It's going to bring about more goals. I think that's interesting in itself. And I hate to say it, but teams that are just hanging on to end up going into overtime just to get a point, it cuts that crap out. It gives you the incentive, again, to go ahead and win in regulation. And not just win, like it brings them all the way from the start of the game. It incentivizes you to show up focused against crappy teams because crappy teams might surprise you and bring you to overtime. And then, yeah, you might have a better set of skill players who are going to win it for you in shootout, but you do get rewarded for winning in regulation. So absolutely, it forces you again just to bring your A game, whether it be on the penalty kill or just the whole game in itself. Win in regulation, I have to say, hats off and very well done by the PWHL. Mm-hmm.
What I would do to add the incentive, because look, we had this conversation with Joey and everybody in our group chat.
Yeah, I remember that. Like now it's like the PWHL is bringing it. I was like, oh shit, okay.
We all have like different opinions on it, right? Like if it was up to me, I would not reward any points at the OT loss or shootout loss, right? Because at the end of the day, like there is teams out there that you can tell that they're just playing for the point, right? Mm-hmm. And back in the day, in the 90s, there was no point when you lose in overtime. You win. You get 2 points if you win in OT.
Those were ties. No, that's why.
Yeah, when there's a tie, you get a point. But if you lose in OT, you get 0 points.
Yeah.
Back in the day. Now, I know with the new NHL, and they want to add points and whatever.
Want to make it entertaining. Entertaining, like you said, right? Yeah.
What I would do to add an extra incentive to what the women are doing, so you do 3 points if you win in reg, 2 points if you win in OT, and only 1 point if you win in shootout.
Oh, that could be interesting.
So now that's even a bigger incentive because now you said you're going to play hard in regulation to get that three, right? Because that it's going to like really change the standings process. But then when you're in OT, yes, you're going to fight harder because you don't want to go to shootout.
Yeah, I like that idea. I actually like that idea.
1 point. Because you can tell in some overtimes that you see the players staying back, right? Because they're just running down the clock to go
win. Yeah, they come in the zone. They circulate a little bit. Oh, shit, no, I don't have a play. Okay, they step out of the zone, do a line change, try again. Yeah, I get that. Yes.
Add a point, lose a point because of that, guess what? You're going to see in overtime everything trying to score that goal.
So you know what? I'm in the same ballpark as you, Ant, except just get rid of 1 point for each segment of the game. So if some fans think, 3 points might be a bit too much, let's just say, like, or if the league thinks 3 points might be too much, then you stick with this. Then probably Joey, if he's listening at this point of the episode, he might agree with this. 2 points if you win in regulation, and just 1 point if you win in overtime or shootout. Because right now, if you win in overtime shootout, you get the 2 points. But if you go to overtime, you're only getting one. Whether it's in you win, whether you score in the overtime period or in the shootout, and if you lose, you lose. That's it.
If you lose, so you get zero. So if you lose an OT or shootout, you get no points.
You get zero. But the winner only gets one, not two, like they do right now. That could be another way. That could be another way too.
I love that. I love that.
Like if you're really, if you really go into the point where no, if you lose, you lose. That's it. Too bad. So sad.
And the only way you both get a point is if it ends in a tie. Oh no!
Because they have to bring back the tie as again, but I don't think they will because there's some overtimes that are very entertaining when teams go back and forth, and you get some shootouts that are entertaining as well. But if you really want like both of you, both your points are great. And again, like if you just reduce it, just remove 1 point for each period or whatever you want to call it. Yeah, just 2 points if you win in regulation, and only 1 point if you win in overtime or shootout. You get 0 points if you lose the game, no matter where it is throughout the game.
I mean, I like that, but I don't think the league will ever go that route because they're gonna want to, you know.
Well, how do you get? But that's another thing too. Does the league want these teams to be so close in the standings that the games get a lot more intense as the season is coming to an end?
Of course. I mean, that's what it is. It's all entertainment now. You want to see the last month of hockey, March Madness, if you want to call it, after deadline, everybody's fighting for that extra point. Because you remove that one extra point, and I think that's why we did that, right? Because if you go back in the day when there was no point rewarded in OT or whatever, the gap between eighth place and ninth place was
quite a bit. Yeah, it's
quite a bit. And they established the playoffs picture at an early rate to the point where the last few weeks of hockey, it's so like, let's rest our good players. Let's just, you know. So I think that is taking away entertainment. It gets the league more like it's going to be boring, right, for the fans to watch because like, oh, my team clinched. Everybody's clinched. Doesn't mean no one's going to – the views are going to go downhill towards the end, and that's not what they want because they do get money in the NHL by TV ratings and all that stuff. So
yeah, absolutely.
They're going to want to keep the standings as close as possible just for entertainment purposes. How many times do you see in the last 2 years where – the last five games really count, you know?
Well, they get intense too. I want them to get rid of the whole division.
I agree with you, and I've been saying this for a long time. It's the fucking stupidest thing. Bring back the 1-8-2-7.
Yeah, 6, exactly.
4, bring that back. Fuck this division shit. It's fucking bullshit.
Okay, Chris, go. We gotta wrap this up, but let's
listen. I can't keep my shit straight. Goes back to the CJEP days. Look. Just a precursor, I'm not going to laugh at people who are, let's say, French-Canadian speaking English and have difficulty or vice versa, English speaking folk trying to speak French and not having the best. Right, Anthony? I know everybody rips on you for that, so I had to join in. I'm in CJEP, and this destroyed the word for me. It completely destroyed. This kid fucking was always stoned. Always stoned, smoking pot. Stupid as can be. Now we're in class and he says the word mouse plural and he says mouses and the teacher stops him and he goes no look man I don't want to say any names but she goes the plural of a mouse is mice. And then she turns, and I think she lined up the student because he was such a degenerate. She turns and she goes, so do you know what the plural of moose is? And the stupid idiot turns and he goes, meese? So it was such a stupid moment. But all I remember was like a class full of 30 students fucking dying of laughter because this moron thought the plural of moose was meese. So anyways, that's my story. I apologize. I can't hear that word without losing my shit.
Okay.
It's so stupid, but yeah, anyways.
Well, thanks for sharing that story, Chris. That's it.
I apologize. Let's keep that word. Let's keep the moose word out of the vocabulary.
Ant, I think we're good to wrap this up, bud.
All right. Let's wrap it up, meese. Cousin it. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you like what you hear, please leave us an honest rating and review. It's only going to make us better. If you like what you hear and you want more content, follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and TikTok. And if you want to see our beautiful faces, subscribe and to our channel on YouTube and watch our podcast on YouTube.
It's free. And
see, you know, Chris's cat. You can see me freak out of something falling in the garage. There's always something crazy.
My so lights were flickering at one point too.
Your lights were flickering. You kept cutting. Fun times.
And the Habs lose to the Ottawa Senators 6-2.
That's what makes us great. And if you want to listen to our podcast, you can listen to us on Apple, Spotify, and any other podcast platform you listen to. Guys, Happy New Year again. We're going to have a great year this year.
Don't forget Saturday against the hated Boston Bruins in Boston, 7 p.m. puck drop Saturday.
Looking forward to that game. We're actually going to be at Habs Cave, so we're going to have some content for you there. All our fans out there, we're going to have we're going for the Liam Foundation, so it's going to be a nice event. Looking forward to that. But until next time, you know what to say. Bye now.
Good night.